League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What are you targeting in free agency if you're the Texans? What position? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We were talking tight end just a moment ago, 8029. You guys, what if the Texans draft Kincaid or Musgrave with the 12th pick? So now you're looking at a tight end at number 12. I'm open to the idea. Like, I don't hate the idea of tight end at 12. Like, if you need a pass catcher for a quarterback, we always call tight ends the safety blankets for quarterbacks. If you go rookie quarterback, I don't care how you get a pass catcher. I don't care if he's a receiver. I don't care if he's a tight end. We say that there's not wide receiver That's ones in this draft. Give me the tight end. I'm fine with that.
I think it's high for a tight end at 12.
What's that?
Trade back?
Yeah, I think you could trade back if you're going to really be focused on tight end.
You have to evaluate the board. I mean, maybe the best tight end's going at 12.
But I was going to say, but if they feel like you do and feel like there's no true wide receiver one in this draft, then you've got to give yourself the best offensive weapons you can get if you're truly going to start developing a quarterback. And the same way they did with Davis Mills, only at a higher level now with a bigger sense of urgency, I would address tight end. I just think 12 is kind of high.
Here's the thing. Like, who has more value in the NFL? Who thinks the best receiver in the NFL right now? Like, Devontae Adams, maybe? Jamar Chase, probably?
Justin Jefferson.
Like, yeah, those are your elite wide receiver ones, right? There's more of those guys than there is elite tight ends. Travis Kelce, I would consider the best tight end in football. Now, he's a little older now, but he's the best tight end in football. I don't think that there's anybody close to Travis Kelce. I think Kelsey's on a tier on his own. Now, Kittle used to be, but he's fallen back a little bit. There's some young up-and-comers that are pretty good.
Mark in Baltimore.
Mark Andrews, you might... Andrews. I don't know if I have him on the Kelce tier yet.
Andrews is also a very big beneficiary of the system.
I think he's actually hurt by the system.
I think they focus on him more than most offenses focus on the tight end.
He's like a high usage, but not high volume. Like, Travis Kelce, they're throwing the ball 40 times a game, whereas Baltimore's throwing it 20 times a game. So if Andrews was if Baltimore just started to throw it twice as much as they throw it, now you're looking at the best volume, and now Andrews racks up the numbers. So from, like, a talent point of view, like, we can put Andrews and Kelce on that same tier, but it's much different offenses. He has a high usage but doesn't have the volume of a Travis Kelce. I think that all those guys are somewhat even. Like, I rather have, and Travis Kelce's age is a factor here, because if you're talking about, like, building a franchise, you wouldn't take Kelce because he's older than Jefferson, he's older than Chase. But if you eliminate age for the moment, what's the difference between having the best tight end in football and the best receiver in football? They're both pass catchers, whereas some of these receivers would be going top five. If you can get the best tight end at number 12, that's amazing value.
It can be, because you look at what the Chiefs were able to do this year when they lost Tyreek Hill and they had to redo their receivers. And really, the reason why they were so successful wasn't because their receivers stepped up. It was because Travis Kelce was all world. And Mahomes just kept throwing him the football. And Baltimore does the same thing. For most of the times that they were throwing, Andrews is the number one target before he looks anywhere else.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, if we change the team out of, like, if the Chiefs get, or like the Bills or the Bengals were to get one of these guys, like, how excited would you be to see Burrow or Josh Allen with, like, a talent to the level of Mayer or Musgroves or Kincaid? I think there is, like, value to that. I think in a perfect world, you would trade back.
Sure. Look, I'm a huge proponent of that. If you can guarantee that you get your top tight end target by trading down four spots and adding draft capital, great. But if you feel like he's going to be drafted in that range, or you're not going to guarantee yourself him at 16, then you probably just need to make the pick.
But I think it's the same exact conversation as the quarterback. It depends on how Caserio evaluates them. Like,
and it always comes down to that.
Because if you have three guys, let's say Caserio grades these three tight ends like he does the three quarterbacks. It doesn't matter what quarterback he gets it to. It doesn't matter what tight end he gets. Then you have the advantage to trade back to 15, 16, 17, because you know there'll be one.
And system and coordinator matter so much.
Absolutely.
Because of the fact, same way we talked about when they drafted Stingley, when Lovie devalued basically the corners in his system. And you look at it and say, look, the reason why Hockenson was so successful in Minnesota as opposed to Detroit was once he got into an offense that really featured the tight end a lot more and got him the touches, he exploded and he made the Pro Bowl. But before that, Detroit just kind of was hit or miss in how they even looked at him or used him because the system wasn't really focused on the tight end the same way. And he struggled mightily in terms of trying to get that established position with the Lions offense. He was good. He just wasn't what he was able to do when he got in the right system. And I think that that's key. Joe, you guys, the Bears drafted the kid from Notre Dame.
Yeah, Cole Komet. He was huge this year.
Yeah, and he finally had a breakout year because basically he was labeled a disappointment from the time he came out, the way he was being used and who was throwing him the football.
Yeah, and honestly, the more I think about it, it's just like having, whether it's Young, Levis, Stroud, whatever, having that safety blanket.
That's the thing.
It just feels like there is real value, especially because, honestly, it really feels like as skill set wide receivers, these three tight ends are way better than the actual wide receivers in this draft. So it's like they should be going first. I think I'm just scared off by the idea of Kyle Pitts. Like, he was supposed to be this superstar talent. I know he went top five or whatever, This is later in the draft.
He's almost a hybrid wide receiver the way he's like, yeah. Kelce even slimmer.
And they just don't use him.
He was also hurt.
Yeah.
I think he's still really good.
And he didn't have quarterback. Sucked. He didn't have quarterback. Like Dick Willie on all four of his accounts is telling us, how do you guys forget Michael Mayer? Michael Mayer's in that top tight end conversation. I think it's those three guys, even the kid from Georgia a little bit as well.
Oregon State Georgia guy after that, but Oregon State guy, Utah guy, and Notre Dame guy.
Yeah, and that's what Joe's kind of talking about, where if all four of those guys Caserio has in the same tier, drop down four spots, select them there. My point is, if there's not a receiver one in this draft, if you're reaching on a receiver because you feel like you need to give the rookie quarterback a target, give him the best tight end. Like, if the tight end's better relative to the rest of the NFL than the receiver is relative to the rest of the NFL, they're both catching 100 passes for you. Like, what's the difference? So, like, take the best pass catcher. I don't care if he's a receiver. I don't care if he's a tight end. Although, I don't want to be pigeonholed to that as well. Like, if for some reason one of your top five players on your big board slides to 12 and he's a defensive player, don't be pot committed to the idea that you must get target there, because one of the tight ends might slip to the second. You might get a Zay Flowers or a Tank Dell in the second, who both look like they could be steals in this draft. Let me run these defensive players by you guys. 713-780-3776. What position groups do the Texans be targeting in free agency? Here are some of the defensive players that I have. I'm attacking here because I don't really think that there's a lot of very good corners. I don't think that there's a lot of really good edge rushers. A couple names that are intriguing, but not a whole lot of edge rushers. I'm targeting defensive tackle, inside linebacker, and safety. The defensive tackles that I like, which a lot of people have already texted in about this, is Darren Payne from Washington, which if he comes here and Chris Harris comes here, which he coached this past season at Washington, he would know him. Now, this dude's going to be expensive. He's 26 years old. He's coming off an 11.5 sack season. He's 6'3", 320 pounds, but he plays defensive tackle, which I love the idea of having a defensive tackle that can have double-digit sacks in a
He's athletic. He's strong. He is a physical force, and that would be a great get for the Texans. And I'm sure DeMeco would love to have him, but you're right. The biggest thing is that's a big price tag.
You'd be expensive. And that's kind of like, what's the philosophy that the Texans going to be with their $40 million? Like, do they spend $40 million on two or three players, or do they spend $40 million on seven or eight players? Right. Which,
now, a year or two ago, we would say that they were going to be trying to get as many guys they could under that whatever money they had on the cheapest contracts possible. You're going to have to commit to a guy like Payne, but if you do, that's a guy that can really upgrade your defense quickly.
Mm-hmm. He would. He'd be a stud. Him and Malik Collins would be a lot of fun.
That's actually why I don't know if you need to get him.
Because of Malik?
Not necessarily because of Malik, but maybe Nick Caserio, we have our doubts about him still. But, like, he got Malik Collins. He got Jerry Hughes. It kind of feels like Nick Caserio has that eye for veteran talent that, like, maybe was not used properly elsewhere that he can use properly here. So, like, that's where I almost wonder, like, can Caserio evaluate that position group at a different level than the rest?
Yeah.
And maybe you don't need to overspend. But Payne would be awesome. I just think you're going to get priced out on
him. What are we looking at average per year?
You know, honestly, I think there was the big issue with free agency this year is the Bears. They have $118 million in cap space.
Yeah, they got to spend a lot of money.
They're going to spend. Like, every tackle and guard and defensive lineman you want.
What would you guess on Payne?
Payne's projected on Pro Football. I'm curious what he is on SpoTrack at $20 million a year. Ooh. So you're looking at
half your money.
So I agree with you. I don't think that the Texans are going to be shopping there. And
they
got him
at $19.4 million.
Okay, so around $20 million.
That's a lot of money, guys.
And Joe, I think, is right about Caserio's ability to find, like, pretty good, like, players that can help. Now, I think he's probably better from finding players that are going to help on a contending team as opposed to a rebuilding team. So a couple of other names at the defensive tackle spot that are intriguing to me. Draymond Jones from Denver, 25 years old, can play inside and edge, which you can play both. So position versatility there. He had 6.5 sacks last year. And then Zach Allen, who's like J.J. Watt's understudy in Arizona, and again can play a little bit of defensive tackle, more defensive tackle than defensive end, but can do both. Really good against the run. Now, he only had 5.5 sacks last year, but he had way less snaps. So those are three defensive tackles that I like. I agree with you guys that Payne's going to be priced out. I don't think Payne's coming to the Texans. Jones and Allen are interesting names to watch. Mm-hmm. The two safeties that I really like, actually there's more than two, but the top of the market, Jesse Bates, who people have texted in about this, 26 years old. I love the idea of pairing him with Petrie. It kind of anchors the backside. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who's a 25-year-old at Philadelphia. He's cheaper. He's going to be cheaper, but he can also play the slot. He can play safety. He can play the nickel corner. And if we're playing a lot of nickel defense,
he can bring a little attitude to your defense.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he's the guy who's ripping from the Saints. Ripping off chains.
Yeah, he's from the Saints. Yeah.
I love attitude.
Yeah.
I like a safety with good demeanor. Demeanor, the better.
But the one thing that was terrible. Really bad. But here's the thing. The thing you worry about when they're so hyper-focused on culture, though, is everybody that's a Saints fan was wondering why they dumped out on him because he was good for them. And then he, you know, gets traded to Philly going to the Super Bowl, and they're like, the Saints never should have made that deal. Maybe the reason why they did make that deal is because he is a little too feisty.
Here are three other safeties that are intriguing, not as high on the market, though. Von Bell, another Cincinnati safety. He's not as good as the other safeties on the list, but he's a good complement for Petrie, I think, because he's more of a strong safety. He can come in the box. He can match up with tight ends. Everybody loves the idea of Jimmy Ward, San Francisco, 32 years old, here with D'Amico. The interesting thing with him, though, doing a little more prep on him, they moved him from safety to nickel this year, and he didn't really love it. Now, eventually, came around to the idea, was really good. Can he move back to safety? Is D'Amico interested in moving him back to safety? That's something that I need answered.
D'Amico liked it, moved him around a lot.
Yeah, and then he's also more of a strong safety where they love Jalen Petrie in the second half of the year at free safety. They loved him playing back more than in the box. And then Taylor Rapp, who's from the Rams. He's 25 years old. They say that he's a jack of all trades, but a master of none. He's only 25 years old.
Think he's mastered is having fun?
Does he?
No, it's a rap song.
It's a rap with two P's. And then there's four inside linebackers that I like. Tremaine Edmonds will be at the top of the market, 25-year-old from Buffalo. I don't think he's really realistic. But three others. David Long, 26-year-old from Tennessee. Finished the season hurt. Maybe you can get him on a value. T.J. Edwards from Philadelphia. He had 99 solo tackles this year.
Philly's got a lot of free agents coming up.
It's kind of worrisome if you're a Philly fan to spend all this money. But you need a linebacker that can tackle and stop the run.
Especially if they win it. Now guys that have already gotten their ring are going to get paid, and they're all jumping ship.
The last one is Drew Tranquil from the Chargers. Another one of those linebackers, 95 solo tackles, can blitz a little bit. I want a linebacker next to Christian Harris that's really good at stopping the run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all four of those guys do that. Who do you want in free agency? What position? 713-780-ESPN. History was made last night in the NBA. LeBron James passed Kareem for the all-time points leader in NBA history. What do we make of it? What do we make of that celebration? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I'll say this, as part of LeBron's celebration, there should have been a little bit of gin bin in his night. I don't know if LeBron's a vodka guy. I don't know if he's a gin guy. I don't know if he's a bourbon guy. I don't know if he's a double cask strength bourbon guy. But whatever one he likes, I guarantee a gin bin does it better than anybody else. Why, you ask? Well, they use their innovative Persado craft technology that makes them better in purity, aroma, and taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben. Compare it to your brand. You're going to taste that huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, A&M Class of 85, by the way, had me out to his tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought, and ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is smooth. It is clean. It eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine, most specs, also online at gentleben.com. They're in many Ma and Pa liquor shops throughout the greater Houston area. If your favorite liquor shop doesn't serve it, well, make sure you tell them to put it on the shelves. You can also find it at the Toyota Center. Gentle Ben's at every single bar inside the Toyota Center. Stop by the Gentle Ben Bar on the main concourse as well. They have their own bar at Section 125. They have their signature drink, the Big Shot Bob. Had a listener tweet us the Big Shot Bob yesterday. You got to get your hands on that one. It is fantastic. By the way, did I mention their Bourbons, the double platinum winner in the prestigious Ascot Awards, just validates how good they are. Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, Gentle Ben.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Looking for James. He's got it. Coming to the end of the third quarter. LeBron James, a shot at history.
Grade the call, Brian Anderson on TNT, 713-780-3776. I was going to go 9-2.
He's like the consummate professional right now. But yeah. Really, the way he kind of encapsulates everything in a short period of time and still has the emotion involved in it, I thought it was perfect for that moment.
That's my second favorite. And I'm not a huge LeBron guy, but I'm not going to knock LeBron's greatness because that would be silly. That's my second favorite Brian Anderson call of all time.
What's the first one? Jordan?
Jordan Alvarez, game one of the ALDS against the Seattle Mariners.
I mean, you talk about guys that, it used to be the big thing, if you get a guy that can do two sports, but the fact that he's so good at both sports, Kevin Harlan, I believe, is very, very good, and he's a little older now, but Kevin Harlan was that up-and-coming guy that you loved, whether he did football or basketball.
Uh-huh.
I love Brian Anderson doing baseball, and I love Brian Anderson and doing basketball.
He was on one of our tournament games last year. I can't remember. Might have been the Sweet 16 Elite 8.
He's also
actually
the TV voice of the Brewers.
Yeah. I can't remember what game, but I met him. He's a really good guy, too. 713-780-ESPN. LeBron broke the record yesterday, though. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was just so thrilled to be there. He was having the time of his life.
There's some bad blood there still.
You think with LeBron and Kareem?
Yeah, Kareem was really highly critical of him about a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And it didn't sit well with LeBron's camp. And I think that they had to play nice for this event. But I felt like it was very uncomfortable the entire time.
Interesting. But what do you make of LeBron passing Kareem's record, what it means for history? I mean, I thought it was kind of funny that they lost the game to Oklahoma City and have a worse record than Oklahoma City. But hey, LeBron, definitely a legend, definitely an all-time great. What do you make of him passing Kareem?
Look, I mean, statistically, you got to give him his flowers. I mean, longevity, unbelievable. His body type, his physicality, the way he's able to do things athletically with his physicality, and then to score that many points and to do those kind of things, he deserves to be considered one of the best players in the history of the game. There's no question about that. But myself, much like you, I'm a Jordan guy, and there's a lot of guys in that top tier in terms of the greatest of all time, and that's why it's such an old, overused debate. And the one thing that I've always heard that kind of gets the debate off the table and allows everybody to be, in the camp of whoever they want to be is that at one point Kevin Garnett was doing an interview with Dwayne Wade, and he said, why can't we just take the decades and say so-and-so was the best player of their decade? And if it was multiple decades, then it was multiple decades. But why do we have to be so particular in just determining it's one guy? Because to me, having witnessed them both in person, I can't speak on Bill Russell. I can't speak on Wilt Chamberlain. But LeBron is so different than Michael in their demeanor and how they would have handled things and the way they do things. And I'm not going to be Cam Juice, Rick Camilla, and try and tell you how many points Jordan would have scored had he stayed in the game and not taken 2 years off for baseball and done those things. But LeBron deserves all the credit in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But that it's a different discussion for me in terms of the greatest overall player as opposed to scorer. You can't take away the scoring aspect from LeBron James.
I hate comparing eras. I hate having the who is greater, Jordan, LeBron conversation. Like, there's a certain level of eliteness that you reach, and all of those guys have reached that. Was LeBron better than Wilt? I don't know how LeBron would have been back in Wilt's day. There wasn't a ton of talent in Wilt's day. We understand that, although Bill Russell was still around. There was a lot of Hall of Fame centers. But there wasn't a three-point line. Like, LeBron James would have had far fewer points.
You
not
say
to say that Wilt would have had
there was
more
only
points,
one guy that could guard
threes.
Wilt. I mean, for the most part, there were very few big men that were as athletic and talented as Wilt and Russell.
I've done a deep dive on that. There was like seven Hall of Fame centers like during Wilt Chamberlain's time. I think that's a little bit overstated.
When he went for a hundo, there was no one that had a chance of stopping him because he just was the most physically gifted player on the court.
But we have no idea how LeBron would have been in that era. We have no idea how Wilt would have been in this era. Heck, we don't know what Jordan would have done in this era. We don't know what LeBron would have done in Jordan's era. So I hate the cross era. across decades, who was greater. Like Babe Ruth. Was Babe Ruth the greatest baseball player ever? I don't know how Babe Ruth would be facing dudes that were throwing 97 with breaking balls that start here, end here. He has the best resume ever, but was he the greatest
one for
talent
me,
ever? No, I don't think so.
Agreeing with your argument, the easiest one for me is, would a very, very frail Steph Curry been able to survive the 80s, 90s NBA where there was hand checking and shoulder bumping and forearm checking, and if you came across the lane or you made a couple of shots, you're going to get knocked on your ass. I don't think that's the kind of play and style of play that's conducive to now an offense where you can't be touched. Then the greatest shooter in the world can just freely shoot jumpers, and he's damn good.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the eras are so different that it's hard to know how they would translate from even like 10 years ago. I'm not going to take away from LeBron James' greatness, though. LeBron James is an all-time great. And the LeBron James story to becoming an all-time great is really one of a kind. Like, he was the chosen one before he even played a high school varsity game. Yeah. Like, and to be able to have all of that pressure, to be the chosen one, to go to the NBA, be a great immediately, to have the career that he's had, no one can take away from the greatness of LeBron James. I'm personally not interested in LeBron-Jordan debate, LeBron-Kareem debate, LeBron-Wilt debate. I just don't care. LeBron is great, Jordan's great, Kareem's great, Wilt is great. The thing with LeBron that kind of sticks out to me, I don't know how much LeBron cares about winning. I believe that LeBron cares more about the image of LeBron than he cares about winning. And I understand that he cared about winning for a certain period of time, but I think he cared about winning because of the image of LeBron. He knew that the image of LeBron would be tainted and tarnished a bit if he never won. If he had all of these accolades, if he had all of these MVPs, if he had the point, you know, championship all time over Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like if he didn't get the title, that would always be tainted because he didn't have the championship. So he knows he needed the championships to build the resume, build the legacy. But look at LeBron James now. Like, LeBron James was celebrating that so much yesterday, and it should be celebrated. It's a hollowed record. Like, it's a great record
to
surpass.
It's also a huge relief to get it off your shoulders.
Absolutely. Like, I can understand that why, like, LeBron is celebrating that way. But they're also a losing team. They lost to Oklahoma City at home, and they have a worse record than the Thunder and would miss the playoffs again. Like, LeBron, in my opinion, has always cared way more about LeBron than he has about winning titles.
My biggest thing is the fact that he's always, much like Kevin Durant, but he was the first really to do the hopscotch of teams to join the best team possible to get a chance to win. When Cleveland didn't have enough to get over the hump, and then he did it in Miami. Then he came back, and that was a great win for the Cavaliers to be able to beat the best team in basketball the year they beat Golden State. But then from there, he was looking for the next avenue, and then it was more about his marketing, to your point, about promoting LeBron. I think he's got enough, but I think the one thing that he's going to chase now is the fact that he doesn't have as many championships as Michael. He knows there's other measurements that he has always said that he has put himself up against, because in his mind, he's always chasing Michael. But I think that overall, when you look at this Lakers team, there was too many sidebars last night. Like, the reason why they lost that game last night, and thankfully Darvin Ham admitted it after the game, they were so focused on breaking the record, they weren't focused on winning the game. Russell Westbrook was so pissed off that, if you look at it, he was pissed off at the Lakers because they were trying to trade him. He was pissed off at LeBron because LeBron said he wanted to trade him to get Kyrie Irving, so that he was the last guy to even say nice job to LeBron when he got the record. Every single possession Russ had last night, he was yanking a three, and he was booed, and they were yelling at him, and he was taking the next one. He turned it over. He was careless. He was throwing it all over the yard. He got into it with Darvin Ham at halftime because when he was taken out of the game, he loafed to the bench and didn't want to sit down. Like, that's a sidebar in itself, to where you're like, the Lakers' focus is not about winning basketball right now, and I don't know if they can change that between now and Thursday.
No, I think it's a poorly constructed team. But, you know, LeBron's celebrating this on a team that's below 500, out of the playoffs, and losing at home to Oklahoma City, who many people thought would be a bottom three team in the NBA this year. How do we feel about the way they stopped the game yesterday? The NBA is leaning into this record. If you go look at their Twitter, they have LeBron's crown as their profile pic, and they also have LeBron as their header on their Twitter as well. And what's up with Anthony Davis and his reaction to LeBron breaking the record? And now that this one is down, now that this record has been surpassed by LeBron, Which record in sports is the most untouchable? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville's the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. And if you don't know what that is, it's essentially taking your own hair from where you have it and are never going to lose it, like the sides and the back. And genetically, the studies show you're always going to have hair there, moving it where you need it most. Sometimes it's on the top and the back, and sometimes it's in the front when you're forehead has become an 8 head and you want your hairline back. They can do all those things, and the NeoGraft procedure makes it your own hair, not the sprays and creams and foams that mask the issue and not solve the issue. This is actually taking care of the problem and giving you your own hair where you need it most, and it's going to stay, it's going to grow, it's going to get stronger and longer, and you're going to love the results. As an ESPN 97.5 listener, you get a bonus that no one else gets, and that is if you go to 975hair.com, you can set up an appointment to meet and talk to Doc Linville and his staff about the NeoGraft procedure. It costs you absolutely nothing. Any person off the street doing that, $150. You get it for free. You can ask all the questions, get all the answers, see if it's right for you too. No strings attached, no obligations. You don't have to do a thing. But if you get all the information like I did and you understand that that information makes a whole lot of sense, you should go and check out the procedure as I did. I could not be happier. My forehead had turned into an 8 head. I didn't have my hairline back. Doc said to me, I can get it back for you. It's going to be simple. It's going to be quick. You're going to like the results. I love the results. And it's because 95%+ of the follicles that are moved stay and grow and are with you for the long haul. It's absolutely fantastic. 975hair.com. Go there right now. Make an appointment. Tell them I sent you by Doc Linville. Best in the business.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Before we get into the which records in sports will never be broken again, what did you make of the celebration for LeBron James? Stopping the game with 11 seconds left to go in the third quarter, taking a 10-minute hiatus, having Kareem give him the basketball, having his family come to midcourt, and delivering a speech to the fans there at Crypto.com Arena.
Well, I know a lot of people are killing it because there was 11 seconds left. But the one thing that I was curious about was I wanted to see how it was going to play out, because they said the league announced before the game, it's a fluid situation. We haven't decided we're going to stop the game the minute it happens. We're going to see how it all unfolds and what he wants to do. It was obvious that's what he wanted to do. The minute he made the shot, turned around, put both hands in the air, and started trying to get everybody to get on board with him just doing it, they just basically shut it all down. If I was the Thunder, I'd have been pissed off, because there was no warm-up time. There was no, and you're winning this game. And this is a hell of a statement game, because everybody's watching this. And otherwise, no one would be watching Oklahoma City Thunder games. To see the way Shai Gilgeous-Alexander played and the rest of those guys, it was like, it would be a shame if, because you sat down and had to watch a big party unfold while you had an 11-point leader and all of a sudden lose that game. I'd have been ticked off beyond belief. But, I mean, that's the NBA. I mean, you said it with the Twitter account as well. When they have a moment that they want to blow up, they are going to use every bit of it to take advantage of it.
To be fair, it's not an NBA thing. It's a sports thing.
Disagree. Disagree.
It's all NBA.
Time out. I can
disagree.
Prove it.
No, I don't think you can.
They literally.
I don't think you can.
I'm literally watching a video right now. Okay. In the second quarter of a meaningless Saints game, mm-hmm. They stopped the game to celebrate Drew Brees.
On that video, there's also a flag on the play. Drew Brees also went to the sideline to embrace his family. He didn't bring him out to midfield. He didn't take the microphone to deliver a speech to the fans there
that
inside the Superdome.
That was extreme.
Exactly. Like, I'm not saying that. Look, and I believe that moment should be celebrated. They have. They have. My point is that they went a bit far, which, if you look at LeBron's career, that tracks. Like, LeBron always is a bit much. LeBron is always a bit extra. The decision with Jim Gray, the way he reacted the other day when he didn't get the foul call. Yeah. LeBron has always been a bit much. I'm not saying that we should be expecting anything less. I'm not even saying that the NBA is wrong here or that LeBron's wrong. And I'm a huge believer in celebrating moments that should be celebrated, and becoming the scoring champ in NBA history should be celebrated. The point is that LeBron James is always a bit much, and in the NBA celebration yesterday was a bit much. I posted this on Twitter, and I had some people come back at me. They mentioned the Drew Brees one, which the Drew Brees one does. They do stop play for a little bit. They stop play for like 2.5 minutes. For LeBron, they stop play for 10 minutes. They had 10 minutes. Well, he grabbed the microphone and delivered a speech with 11 seconds left on the third quarter clock. And dropped an F-bomb at Crypto.com Arena.
On TV.
It was a bit much.
I think the worst part about all of this is that for the rest of our lives, we're going to have to say that LeBron broke the record at Crypto.com
Arena. I know.
Arena,
that's my favorite part.
And most likely that's going to lose their name and they're going to be a fraud like FTX was and all that stuff. Like, it's just...
But here's the thing.
It sounds so bad.
This is an NBA deal. The NBA is big on scripting because knowing the people behind the scenes, I think as much as they wanted to tell you it was a fluid situation, they knew exactly what was going to happen and what they were going to do. They had people, some of their people were lined up with Kareem. Other people were lined up at the scorer's table. Other people were lined up at the both benches. And then the three top guys in PR for the NBA circled him and started explaining, now we're going here, then we're going there, then we're doing this. So it was pretty scripted, and it was all NBA, and this is their centerpiece. LeBron is their guy and has been for a long period of time, and they were going to blow it up. I would have done one thing differently. I understand that some people are going to have a problem with the 11 seconds. It is what it is. It happened when it did. But I think the bigger thing was there should have been a warm-up. If you're going to do that, then there should be a warm-up period before you take the court again. And I don't care if then you finish 11 seconds, get a timeout. For the Thunder's sake, who had no interest in any of this except for to be spectators, the fact that they could have gone ice cold and it could have cost them the game, there should have been a warm-up period.
I think it's really just the speech, though, to me, that honestly is the difference.
The family at midcourt was Kareem giving them the ball.
Yeah, but like I just watched another one, too, that like the entire Detroit Tigers clubhouse leaves the clubhouse, and Miguel Cabrera's family comes out onto the field just this last season when he gets 3,000 hits.
Okay, did he deliver a speech?
I think the speech is the difference.
Did it stop time in the game? See, baseball's a tough
one. They don't have time. Exactly. They stop for 2 minutes.
Baseball's a tough one to compare because of the time element, but if you just want to go like the amount of time that the play was stopped, LeBron was 10 minutes. Miguel Cabrera was what you said, too.
It's like 2 minutes.
The other ones that people sent to me were the Drew Brees was one that was sent to me. The Emmitt Smith one was one that sent to me whenever he passed the rushing yards record. Yeah. But even Emmitt, like, he was back on the field in the huddle 2 minutes later. He didn't bring his family on the field. He didn't deliver a speech. The one that might have been the most egregious to date that was put on my radar was Cal Ripken. When Cal Ripken Jr. came out of the game halfway through it, middle of the fifth, on the day that he broke Lou Gehrig's record for the most consecutive games, he did a victory.
He did the lap.
He did a victory. And that one took a long time. That one took a long time, but he didn't bring the family out. He didn't deliver a speech.
And honestly, I will say, like, the one thing, maybe other, like the MLB, maybe they could do more of this. Like the NBA, like the one thing they are good at is marketing, I feel like. Like they've marketed LeBron well his entire career and a lot of other guys. Like they know when it's the right time to celebrate moments. And yes, there are typically teams on the other side of this. But, like, they do know typically how to market things correctly. It's, like, really the only thing they do right.
They're geniuses at it. They started with Stern, where they really turned a corner and set themselves as the gold standard amongst pro sports leagues. But I think in this case, if this happens in the second quarter, I don't think anybody's questioning it nearly as much because it's the first half. It's not – the game is still wide open to be decided.
Well, they could have just waited 11
I don't think so.
Seconds.
Yeah, that was my thing. Like, just wait to the end of the third quarter. Like, I don't – to me, it wasn't where it was in the game.
I think early in the game, people wouldn't be making as big a deal of this because, again, this was the end of the third quarter. Oklahoma City was winning this game, which was a surprise to a lot of people, and the team had a legit problem. If they have a legit problem with it, you understand it. Because they had to sit for so long. If this is the first half and you still have halftime and you have break, I don't think people would be making as big a deal of that.
I didn't really care about that. To me, it was more just about it being a bit much.
Think that's because, like you said, that LeBron's been a bit much his whole career, people hold that against him too?
I don't even know if I hold it against him. Like, I think that it should have been celebrated. Like, I just think it was more than we've ever seen before. And I don't even know if that's a bad thing to do. Like,
because when will it get passed?
Probably never.
Probably never is right. But you know what? I'll tell you what I don't like. Because even him starting to cry at one point was hard for me to believe. Because everything was too calculated.
He's Russell Wilson. But
like, he needs 36. Most guys, 36 is out of the is like a far-fetched. He might get it, but the chances are he's not going to get it. He's going to get it Thursday night. But when he had the headphones with the number on the top of the headphones.
Yeah, he had to get it then.
And he had the suit, and he was mic'd up, and then in the mic'd up, he basically tipped everybody off. I'm taking it back to the throwback with the headband. there was no doubt he was going to – and it was no doubt in my mind the Lakers were all basically going to – they were told to just give the ball to LeBron and get out of the way.
I will say it is still not a better moment. One of my favorite basketball memories of all time will always be Kobe going for –
60
in his last game, and they won that game.
Oh, like, yeah.
Just, it was awesome.
And he dropped the mic at
he
the end.
So
Mamba
good.
Out.
What do you think that Kobe, this is kind of to my point earlier about LeBron, the competitor. I think he cares more about the brand than he does to, like, win. How do you think Kobe or Jordan would have reacted to breaking Kareem's record to bring the Lakers to within 6 points against the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Want to get back to the game.
See, I don't think they would have had to celebrate like the like they stop play, they do all that, whatever. But LeBron's reaction immediately after he made the shot was like he made a game winner.
Yep.
I don't think that Jordan or Kobe would have had that reaction.
Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go. They might have done a little pomp and circumstance. They'd have been like, come on, let's go.
But even the immediate reaction, like LeBron acted like Jordan over Elo to win a playoff game. Like if Jordan would have made that shot to pull the Bulls within 5 points of Oklahoma City in a game where like, hey, they probably need to be winning this game if they have true playoff aspirations, he would have been like, you know, he wouldn't have had that over-the-top reaction where he's running back up the floor with his hands in the air.
Maybe I'm wrong. One of my biggest criticisms of LeBron and why I give Kobe so much credit. And I hated Kobe the competitor because he always beat my teams. And he did things. He was the closest thing to the second coming of Jordan from that killer instinct, that fire in his belly, that win at all cost mentality. And that's why I don't think he gets enough credit of being in the discussion as one of the greatest to ever play this game, because he had more championships than LeBron. He did things in a way and won games in a way that I have only seen Jordan do in person, where they could be down 11 points with less than a minute to play. He's going to make three unbelievable threes contested, contorting his body to win a game, and you leave scratching your head going, how the hell did that just happen? Because it was win and no other thing was on the agenda, and I think Jordan was like that. I don't think LeBron is quite the same way.
LeBron might – look, here I go comparing eras whenever I don't like comparing eras. LeBron might be a better player than Jordan and or Kobe,
but he wasn't
the competitor. Of Jordan and Kobe, but, which kind of like elevates why Jordan won so many titles and LeBron has not.
The one argument on the better player aspect is the defensive side of the ball. Michael could absolutely handcuff you and wrap you up and put a bow on you if he wanted
to. LeBron can. He just never really
wants. Well, that's the point, too. Michael did every night. Michael might have played 36 holes and drank a case of beer, but that night, if you were their best player, he was going to lock your ass down.
Yeah, I've always been curious about, like, when we talk about like the Michael stuff, he's the one player. I would say him and Wilt, of just when they translate to this era, the package or like the baggage that comes with their stories, how it plays out today. You know, like,
yeah.
What is Michael like? You know, it was so crazy back then, like, and you saw in The Last Dance, like, he couldn't go anywhere. But, like, Michael wouldn't be at the casino.
Yeah, he wouldn't be able
to. If Wilt had thousands of women or whatever he claims, supposedly.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, you
it
can
would
still
be,
pull off. You, I think you still pull
it would
that
just
off.
Be, it
just
it
wear
just
some
be
knee braces. Your legs will come back.
It would be interesting to see, like, how they would handle the pressure that LeBron has dealt with
era,
that
era.
They just did not
That
have.
Would be part of it, but here's the other thing. I go, because I don't, again, I agree. I hate comparing the eras, but I would say this in terms of the physicality, every night, and especially in the playoffs, Jordan knew the Pistons, the Celtics, there was three or four teams that were going to knock him on his ass and physically beat him up every single night, and yet he was still able to do the things that he did. It's obviously a different era now where you can't touch the offensive player, and that's a big difference. Now, LeBron is a big dude. He can endure some stuff, but like until you go across the lane and get knocked, you know, airborne onto your fanny, you just don't realize how physical it was back in those days.
I would love to see LeBron's reaction to the Jordan rules playing the bad boy Pistons with his overreactions. 4187, Branham the Hater is back. If he wants to celebrate his accomplishment, stop being jealous because you're a Rockets homer. Didn't know it was Rockets homer.
I didn't either.
Did you ever achieve a scoring milestone? I never achieved a scoring milestone, but I did hit 400 in my senior year of baseball. Joe George, did you know that? I was 2 for 5 my senior year, hit 400.
No, did you get hurt or just didn't play that often?
Oh, I was a bench guy.
No, I thought the bigger accomplishment was the big game in Pee Wee basketball.
That was actually the Atascocita Basketball Association, the ABA, which I dropped 41. I dropped 41 in an ABA basketball game. Gerard Johnson dropped 65 in a game. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Let's have the conversation. Which records in sports will never be broken? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Did you see Kevin, not Kevin Durant, did you see Anthony Davis's reaction when LeBron hit the game? I mean,
did you see the rumor this morning that Anthony Davis could be traded to the Nets for Kevin Durant?
Really?
Yeah. Maybe that's why.
I would do it.
That's
what I'm
saying. The sidebars. You had that reaction from Anthony Davis. You had the Russell Westbrook thing unfolding throughout the game, and then evidently at halftime between his head coach and Russ. Like, the sidebars alone say the Lakers are so completely upside down right now. It's like what they try to do between now and Thursday could be really interesting.
Rob Pelinka is the Bill O'Brien of the NBA. Like, that roster is not constructed to be cohesive. Like, it's just a collection of talent.
And the funny thing is the bubble chip is the one that they hold their head up high and say that they got, but that was really kind of tainted the way they got it.
Yeah.
But that was LeBron. Everybody said he had to get that. To your point about him kind of easing off the gas on like the team accomplishments, he knew coming into L.A., the whole city was trashing billboards and murals of him going, he's not our guy till he wins one. So he thought once he won the one in the bubble, he's good.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. What are the records in sports that are never going to get passed? 713-780-3776. Let's go to the one and only in Denver. Juan, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's up, Juan?
Hey, what's up? I just wanted to throw out Dennis Rodman as a defensive-minded person myself. Rebounding record. 7 straight seasons with the rebound record and just a number of rebounds. So how close do you think somebody's going to get to that record? Will Chamberlain has the first one. You know, he's one, and Rodman's number two. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Great show, guys.
Thank you. I think it's attainable.
I don't think Rodman's two.
No, but he's talking about, I think, in terms of consecutive seasons winning the rebound title.
Yeah, but he said Wilt's one, Rodman's two. Rodman's 23rd. Bill Russell's second. Wilt has, in his career, just under 24,000 career rebounds. Third is Kareem with like 17,000. Wilt. Wilt Chamberlain's one.
Wilt,
Russell, Kareem. Russell, okay. Elvin Hayes, the Big E. I'll see him tonight. He's four.
I really, again, you know, the one thing that I really loved about the celebration last night was at least people took the time to recognize a guy that gets overlooked far too often in Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a finesse center, and he's also criticized. He had the most unblockable shot in the game. His touch with a very, very difficult, challenging shot in the sky hook was not something he got enough credit for. And the fact that he had the longevity that he had, everybody talks about MJ and LBJ. And they look past a guy that just did everything. He put up numbers. He got rebounds. He won championships. And I thought that at least the good thing was even Shaq after the game to take the time to have the moment with Kareem to basically thank him and say, you know, they pay homage to him. He deserved all that.
Now, Rodman did have 7 consecutive in a row. Does that ever get touched?
I think it can.
See, that was I think it could as well. Like, it's going to take one special talent.
Right, you get one big guy that's highly dominant. That, you know, can, and it's definitely possible. I mean, look, there's not Moses Malone was the king of the chairman of the boards for so long because that was his main focus, was he was just going to go and get everything no matter where it was. I think that you could get a guy in today's NBA because all the 7-footers seem to be more like Giannis or Wembanyama or even a Rudy Gobert type that aren't the physical yet athletic big man. And if you get one of those guys, I think they could dominate the league inside.
Yeah, they're going to have to be a good enough scorer, though. Because, like, Dennis Rodman nowadays, he lacks so much offense, mm-hmm. especially, like, when he was with the Bulls and things like that, that he probably is not going to play a whole lot. So, like, you need to have
he's
somebody
a liability. He was a liability on offense, for sure. Free throw shooting is one thing, but just offensively, I had a buddy of mine at the gym that said Rodman was a scorer, or he was an offensive No, he wasn't. He played at a Division II school in college, and he just cleaned up everything off the boards and put it back and or dunked it off the fast break. Rodman should never be considered a scorer or an offensive weapon. He was a liability on offense.
Wilt's 100-point game, never be broken. I agree with that. I don't think that's ever going to be
touched. I think Pete Rose's hit streak's never going to be
broken. Honestly, I think there's
another... hit streak, the hits, the total
hit streak
hits.
Might not be broken.
4,000 hits, I think both of those will be tough. I don't think it's touching that one.
I think there's more likely the 100-point game than I think the rebounding one's great.
The seven in a row?
Oh, no, just the total rebounds.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be touched either.
There's three active players on the top 50 all-time rebound list. LeBron, he's 32nd. DeAndre Jordan is 39th, and Andre Drummond is 43rd.
Oh, wow.
Those are the active players.
But so that, like, also gives you to our point.
Who's the next guy?
But to our point in terms of the seven in a row, if the last two guys are on that list, that tells you they're nothing players for the most part. If you get a guy that can just clean the glass, I think the seven rebounding titles in a row can be accomplished.
See, I think they need to be able to score a little bit.
Because you got to stay on the court.
Because you got to stay on the floor. You got to get significant minutes.
I think rushing is number one on my list.
Emmitt Smith?
I think, honestly, I think Pete Rose is more likely than...
See, Pete Rose will be so tough because...
It's a lot of hits for a long time.
They don't run the ball anymore. Like, it's just... I mean, maybe the offense will change back at some point. Like, in the next 20 years, we'll see, like, a recycle of what the NFL is. And that's probably most likely, I guess. But, like, it feels
the
like...
The better argument is we've devalued the running back. And the running game because it's so pass happy.
Like, no one's ever going to touch 18,000 yards.
We've also devalued the 45-year-old first baseman without any power. The Astros showed you that this offseason. Cal Ripken's consecutive games. Why'd you roll your eyes?
Because you're rolling it back to the Yuli conversation?
I'm just saying that it's tough to be a weak-hitting first baseman that's old. People will get rid of you. Like, they will. It's fact.
But if you're gutty-gritty Pete Rose, you just keep getting hits.
You just kept getting hits. Cal Ripken's consecutive game played streak. I think that one's probably pretty safe as well. Like, everybody needs days off nowadays.
Yeah, everything with load management and rest, and even the way Dusty managed his team and was constantly giving guys days off, I think that...
Dusty's not unique in that, though.
No, I'm not saying, but I'm saying from a local perspective for our audience, the best way to kind of encapsulate it and have them be able to... get on board with it is the fact that, look, we saw how the Astros were managed, and the better teams are always giving their guys days off. And unless a player comes in hell-bent, and even still, you're going to have the right general manager and manager to go along with it, and injuries happen too. So I think the fact that, like, 300 wins in Major League Baseball and the win total for starting pitchers, I think the days of 300 wins are basically over.
But Cy Young had, like, over 500. So, like, that one would never get
that's
touched.
Untouchable.
7-8-6-9. A lot of people texted this one. And Nolan Ryan, 7 no-hitters. Like, no one's touching 7 no-hitters. Like, no one's even pitching 7 complete games, like, in a decade.
That's true.
What about, like, with the way the NFL's changed, like we just talked about with the rushing? Do you think someone's going to catch Jerry? 23,000 receiving
pass happy,
yards?
I think pass happy
one
NFL.
Person?
It's possible.
That's going to be a hard one, too. I think it's more in play than the rushing
record.
Yeah,
I do, too.
Yeah,
do
like
too.
Justin Jefferson, like, I think, like, if there was a book that would take odds on someone to break the record, like, I would feel comfortable placing a small, long odd wager on Justin Jefferson.
I mean, the thing is, though, that Jerry Rice played so long. Like, he played
longevity
into his early
is always
40s.
A big look at Brady. I mean, a lot of the reasons why these guys, and look, unlike a Vince Carter making the Hall of Fame type discussion because of his longevity, the longevity of these guys were, they're damn good, and they're damn good for a long period of time and able to stay in the game. That's rare these days because guys get hurt. Guys get dinged up. Guys know that they made enough money that they can walk away. And I don't think guys are hyper-focused like the Justin Verlanders of the world to say, there's more for me to achieve because I want to be one of the greats of all time.
Does anyone else even get to 300?
300 wins?
I said 300 wins alone is going to be
I think it happened.
A spectacle.
Let's say besides Justin Verlander.
Okay, well, now you threw a wrench into the question.
So, he's the only
I think Verlander
like, really
is the
close.
Last guy to get it.
Like, can
I think somebody will do it again. It just might be rare and not for a while.
Because you think about how Jabba Chamberlain and Strasburg and all these guys were just completely babied, and then they still had Tommy John, and organizations are so hyper-focused on trying to keep them healthy for the long term, and the more you do that, the more they get hurt anyway.
And honestly, this is one of my outlandish takes, I feel like, and why 300 wins might be obtainable at some point. I think we are going to see Major League Baseball baby their players and eventually change the win rules.
Ooh.
Changes like
four. I hope not.
I hope not too, but I just got this like weird, bad feeling that like one day we'll wake up and they'll be talking about you only have to pitch 4 innings instead of 5 to get a win.
I think a pitcher is going to come up at some point that's really young, that's on a good team, that can pitch for 20 years and win 300 games. Like I think it will happen again. I don't think it's going to happen as often, obviously, and I think it's probably going to take a while.
It's a different discussion. I really do. I think it's highly far-fetched to get another 300 winner, but I think 300 game winner. But I believe it's possible. But that's why the wins total for a career for pitcher is completely unreachable.
No one's touching Cy Young. Somebody texted Wilt Chamberlain's 15.5 points per game back in the 62 season. No one's going to average 15.5 points a game again.
That's crazy.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Brian, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Brian?
What's going on? What's going on?
What's up, man?
I would say first, Akeem Olajuwon's block shot record. Secondly, Ricky Henderson stole the base record. And maybe A.C. Green's streak without missing a game.
Oh, I thought he was going to go a different way with A.C. Green. I thought he was going to say something different. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought he was going to say something different.
You want to describe how AC that streak was broken?
I'll leave that up.
Unlike Cal Ripken, he hung up.
He hung up. 167. Those are all good ones. The Ricky Henderson stolen base one's really good.
Yeah.
Now, the bases are getting bigger. Which is going to lead to more stolen bases.
Well, not only that is, but if you can only make two moves to first base before you're not allowed to go over there, I hate it too. But that's going to be more conducive to more stolen bases.
Kyle Tucker's going to love it though.
The major tournament wins that Jack Nicklaus holds will be hard to beat. I agree with that one. 18 major championships.
Yeah, Tiger ain't doing
it. Tiger should have had it.
He should have had it.
He's not going to get there. And golf is so competitive now because of the money in it. Although more people are leaving to live, I don't think anybody comes close to Jack's 18.
I think it's obtainable.
Really?
I think you still get a phenom that can play the game and you can see how quickly they can distance themselves in golf and if they get hot, I think it's possible.
I think it's the Wilt argument. I think there's too much talent.
Yeah, I think so too.
There's too many guys that like we talked about it for Spieth for like 2 years? Like could he be the next guy? And he's
even Rory who got off to the Rory early too. Start stacking a couple of majors.
Too much talent now, just like in the golf world.
Who's like Tiger? I wouldn't consider Tiger like an active golfer. I know that Tiger is an active golfer, but he's not really an active golfer.
Maybe Charlie will get it.
Like who is the I'm trying to look real quick. I would guess that it's Rory McIlroy, right? That's probably the most active golfer that's still somewhat near their peak.
Yeah.
He's got four.
That's it?
He's got four. Like, there's no one that's going to come close to Jack Nicklaus's 18. Like, I just don't see it. Brooks Koepka has four. Like, I don't see that.
And now he's not allowed.
Ever. Why? Oh, because, he's still allowed. The live guys are going to play in the majors.
The Masters.
I think they're going to play in all of them. I think they're going to play in every single one.
I didn't think they could play in all of them.
Especially because they're making
Well, they can't play in the PGA.
Yes, they can. It's not governed by the PGA of America or whatever. There's two different governing bodies that run the PGA Championship and that run the PGA Tour, PGA of America.
I thought they could only play Masters and maybe the British.
No, they're playing all of them.
Wow.
And if they have exemptions, they're playing all of them. Now, the official world golf ranking stuff is going to be a problem in the next coming years if they don't get status.
I thought John Rahm was a guy that could go on a run, but he's hot again this year. I don't think he's that hot.
One major. One major. So that Jordan Spieth has three, but he's kind of fallen off. No one's touching 18. 713-780-ESPN at HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. In case we missed it, all the things we've been wanting to talk about, but Brendan Riley hasn't let us. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.